All right, welcome to the Union Federation podcast, where we discuss both Star Trek and the Orville here on the Fandom Podcast Network. My name is Kevin Reitzel, and I'm going to be the captain this week of the Union Federation Starship. And with me, of course, as always, is our first officer and counselor, and of course, co-host of Galaxy Class, the Star Trek Next Generation podcast, and All Good Things, a Star Trek Universe podcast, both on United Federation of Podcast Network. Please welcome Amy Nelson. How are you? There you go.
Hello, hello. Great to be back. Really? I don't know. I think I still want to be with my Trek family in Chicago.
Ah, we'll talk about that. Or are you still there, but we're just in your mind?
Yeah, I need to say something real so I can snap myself out.
Now, we're a little shorthanded here today. Of course, Kyle is on planet Taxis right now, and he's been real, real busy right there. Haley can't make it this week, but we will get her back next week, as well as Kyle when he gets out of his tax conundrum, so to speak. So it's just us today, but, you know, we can handle this. I can handle the captaincy and also the security and the weapons, I think. Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. I'm a good first officer. I can deal.
Yeah. You know, if I start losing my mind a little bit, I might need you to help me out, Amy. Okay.
I got it. We got it.
Well, this week on Union Federation Podcast, this is episode 123. We are discussing Star Trek Picard Monsters, season 2, episode 7. And before we go any further, spoiler alert, we're going to go deep into the recent episode. So if you have not seen it, please pause this podcast and go watch it. All right. So let's go ahead and let's get into a little bit of news here. All right, Amy, we only got really one big news thing here, and this is to pick your brain, get inside your mind, because you got to go to Star Trek Mission Chicago. Now, just to clarify, this is kind of like a newer type of convention that can kind of be like what Star Trek Las Vegas was, but like they're kind of doing a new thing and going to different cities. Is that the way this is?
Right. Doesn't the Star Wars do that?
Yeah, the Star Wars Celebration moves from city to city. It usually hits certain big ones all the time, but like it was in Chicago the last time in 2019, right before the pandemic. So I noticed that, but I guess the Star Trek Mission convention is kind of a new thing, but still run by people who've done stuff before.
Yeah, so this 55-year mission is run by Reed Pop, and Star Trek Las Vegas is run by Creation Entertainment. So that's the difference. And Reed Pop is the one that now has the CBS endorsement.
License? Gotcha.
Yeah, license. Okay. Yeah. So that was the change with that. And so it was very interesting. It was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I wasn't able to go on Friday, but I did get Saturday and Sunday. And very similar to Star Trek Las Vegas, they had a very wonderful main theater area with the stage and the big TV monitors. You had your assigned seating for those who bought the extra tickets, and then your general, you know, more in the back. They still had all the autographs, the group photos and individual photos. They had a vendor room that was much larger, actually, than Star Trek Las Vegas.
I love vendor rooms. That must have been fun. Yeah.
It just wasn't as well attended. Like, it very spread out, there's so many more vendors in Vegas. I'm not sure if that's because it was the pandemic or right. I sort of felt like the 55-year mission, they didn't do enough marketing. And right. So like the number of actors compared to STLV was much lower. And right. So then I'm wondering if vendors didn't feel that it was going to be worth it to get out there.
It sounds like it's still a convention that needs to find its feet. And I think it will, because it seems like it had, a decent amount. Now, with when you did pictures, did they separate you with the talent with like the glass and like in some conventions have been doing or no?
I did see some with it. I'm not a big photo op person. We did get one photo op in our lower decks with Boimler and Mariner. So that was
very cool.
But yeah, some did have plexi, some did have masks, and then some didn't. And so it just sort of depended on the actor. They had more like conventions, and this is not typical of Las Vegas. So it was the first time of me seeing it, but you know, they have those half dividers with the curtains and you line up to see the actors. I'm not used to that. And so that felt more distant.
Right, right.
But you could still, see them. They had a lovely museum with pieces actually different from the cruise. They had more Strange New World uniforms and props that weren't on the cruise. So that was really nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they had, of course, my favorite fan sets. They were there, bought a couple more pins. And Mike McMahon was, is that his lower deck?
I can't remember.
Yeah,
can't
McMahon. Remember. Yeah, Mike McMahon.
Mike McMahon.
Yeah, he was there. So, they had a whole lower decks panel, and they had a Prodigy panel. They had a cute character dressed up as Doll. I really wanted to get my picture with him. But nice. He was out wandering the vendor's room and just hanging around. It was so good. We did get to see part of the upcoming episode of Prodigy as a little sneak peek.
Oh, very cool.
Yes. And they're like, put your phones away.
Nice.
So that was pretty darn awesome.
Was there any Murph sightings?
There were some great cosplays with Murphs, and nice. There were even some the homemade plushies that people are making because there's nothing to be purchased and they're making them themselves. And so it was so wonderful to see that too.
It seemed like the two animated shows, Lower Decks and Prodigy, got a lot of love and attention at this show.
Yes. And finally, because I didn't see them, last time at STLV. And so now to have like two main panels and it was really, really good.
Well, we were sharing a picture and describing it at the last episode where the main four member cast of Lower Decks actually showed up somewhere. And I think it might have been that convention in real uniforms. Which is great when you see characters dressed up like they're animated characters. And even the actor that played Boimler had like a little like a purple wig on. It looked really cool and stuff. And you had on your own Lower Decks outfit and hanging out with friends. Tell us a little bit about that.
Heck yeah. So Saturday. Oh no. Was that Sunday? So I think Saturday I wore my TNG scant. And then Sunday was, we all did our Lower Decks and that's when they had the panel and stuff. And we got our picture with Boimler and Mariner. It was so good to see all the Lower Decks love. And like Badgie was there and, just so much fun. And people, there was like Mirror Boimler. There was, what was that Boimler when he was all like mismatched? I can't remember the episode, but.
Yeah.
They're just.
I gotta tell you, those uniforms translate well to reality. They look sharp on you guys.
Yeah, they are really good. And I did get a lovely jacket that's Discovery that is my new favorite. And it's like you wouldn't know it's Star Trek, but if you know, you know.
Oh, okay. So, nice.
There's some good things there.
Did you get any other cool swags besides that and some pins from fan sets?
Yeah, I did get some pins. Lou takes care of me, love fan sets, and got some gifts for some other people too, that they couldn't make the convention. They gave away some posters. Let's see if I can. But I got the new, I got Strange New Worlds poster.
Nice.
And then look, I got a Prodigy poster and then a Lower Decks poster.
Oh, those look sharp. I love those.
Yeah. So very I nice. Have those three and then the Picard one. So I'm only missing the Discovery one, and they had them there. I don't know what I was thinking, and I didn't pick one up, and they were giving them out free.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. That's so cool. Did you meet any other celebrities from any of the shows at all?
Well, Kenneth Mitchell was there, mm-hmm. and I did stop and talk to him because we had a connection there on the cruise.
Nice.
And he was just tender. He said he loved me again. I just, thank you.
What a sweet guy.
And Anthony Rapp was with him. And so I said hi, but you know, I really wanted to see Ken because this is going to be his last outing.
Last event. Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. Did you, walking away from it afterwards, because I just want to mention that they have announced the location and the dates for the next year, and that is Star Trek Mission Seattle. That's where it's going to be in the Emerald City, mm-hmm. and it's going to be May 26th through 28th in 2023. So,
I'm a little wondering about their choice because here in the United States, that is our Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
So prices for traveling are going to be higher. It's a holiday weekend, so everything's going to be more expensive, hotels. And I'm like, I can see why they would want to do it because people are going to be off work, but then it's that added cost. So I don't know.
Yeah. It seems to me like Star Trek, Las Vegas, they might want to kind of pick one place and just kind of, then pick the time of year and then just kind of have it around there. I mean, you want to pick a place that's kind of easy to go. There's a lot of hotel options, you know, obviously Vegas or, Orlando or, you know, Atlanta or something like that. That's got a lot of stuff around it, even LA. But right now it looks like, they're trying to find a niche for it and that it's going to be moving from place to place. So mm-hmm. we'll see what happens. Any idea of whether or not you might go or not? Too soon to tell.
You know, I'll be there. I can't not.
Seattle's a great town. It's a great town, but yeah, that is, it is close to Memorial Day weekend. So yeah. Okay. Well, that's so cool. I mean, I'm glad you had fun and it was nice to see the pictures of you posting and stuff like that. So,
yeah, it's always good.
Real quick. What did you like about Chicago? I'm assuming you've been there before, right?
So, and I was telling a bunch of my Uber drivers, I'm like, it took me three times to say, okay, I like Chicago. It's such a cold city and I'm living in Las Vegas. I'm used to the warm. I was cold the whole time, but with that, did some amazing tours. I did this one, the foods tasting of Chicago, and we walked around the city and got to highlight all some of the yummy, delicious foods.
It's good eating in Chi-Town.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Did you take the L train at all?
Yes, definitely. Yes. Most definitely. Good. Very easy to navigate. Did an architecture riverboat cruise. So got to see that. And then went up actually to a couple of rooftops. Rooftop bars are my new favorite thing in Chicago. Very good cocktails and excellent view. There's this one that's called the 360 view at the top of the Hancock. And you go out and then they tip the windows so that you're looking over the skyscraper.
I've seen those. Those are creepy.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to lie. I screamed twice.
Yeah. It's, I remember going to the top of the CN Tower in Toronto and they have these clear floors when you go out to the observation deck and you could look straight down.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a little creepy too. Yeah. Well, very, very cool. I'm glad you had a great time. It was nice to catch up with you regarding your Star Trek away missions and the one in Chicago.
And I just want to say it just was all even the better because we stayed together at an Airbnb and it was all of the hosts of Galaxy Class. So it was a nice podcast, you know, reunion that we all were in the same place. We watched the Picard episode together. It was made it extra special.
That's awesome. It's great when you can meet up with friends. You know, that's what I like about going to these conventions. It also becomes a family reunion. So that's great. All right. Well, let's head on out of the news and let's get into the main part of the show. All right, we are here to talk about Star Trek Picard episode Monsters, season 2, episode 7, air date on April 14th, 2022. And we got a little bit of Admiral Log here with the episode synopsis. Amy, take it away.
All right. Inside his mind, Picard relives part of a memory from his childhood where his apparently abusive father, Maurice, chased Picard's younger self and his mother, Yvette, through the house. Talon helps Picard realize that his mother was actually struggling with mental illness and Maurice was just trying to protect her and Picard. Picard wakes up from his coma and Talon reveals that she is actually Romulan and possibly Laris's ancestor. Picard theorizes that Q may have a personal stake in his trial and asks Guinan to summon Q using Elarian ritual. The ritual fails just as an FBI agent enters the bar and arrests them based on surveillance footage of Picard using his transporter. Rio secretly brings Teresa and her son on the La Serena, confessing that he is a time traveler. Raffi and Seven discover that the ship's computers have been sabotaged with Borg encryption codes and begin to track Agnes. They find a bar where she smashed a window and realizes that the Queen is trying to create more endorphins in Agnes until she has enough power to assimilate more people and become a new Borg Queen.
Yeah. Okay. So I get a quick question. Do you think, did you get vibe from that, FBI agent, like a Fox Mulder type guy where he's a little on the nerdy side. So he's a little more understanding of weird stuff. Cause he had mentioned that he liked he was more into sci-fi. And when Guinan was kind of questioning him at the end, like, you know, really, why are you really doing this? And kind of questioning like who he is. Did you get that kind of vibe that he's kind of like a nerdy FBI guy?
Yes, because he was like, what did he say? Something about, I don't need to leave my mark in crop circles, or like he right. was going through like all the crazy stuff. So it's like, yeah. I'm familiar with crazy. So what you have to say is I will believe you. I sort of got that hint from him.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling he's been to a couple of conventions. That was what I got out of that. But I wanted to ask you, of course, what was your first reactions to this episode?
Oh my goodness, Kevin. So watching it with other Trek fans, but it was very late and we might have had a few drinks before. And we got done with the episode and we were like, what did we just watch? None of us really knew what was going on. We recognized Gaius Baltar and we'll get talk to him. And so that was fun to, but we just didn't know. So I, of course, had to rewatch when I was in a better state of mind and awake. And boy, if you allow yourself to go on the ride, it is so rewarding. It's so introspective. It's not moving the story. It's going deep instead of going through to the arc. And I felt like it was more fantasy, which I've never seen Star Trek go that far into. So it's definitely standing apart. I don't know if I'm 100% on board with it and if I would like to see more, but for this time and learning deep fears and what sort of triggers Picard is very, very interesting.
Interesting you say that. When I first watched it, I was like, WTF did I just watch?
Yeah, right?
I'm like, what's going on here? And then it started reminding me of a trope that I'm not a fan of when it comes to episodic television. And it's one of these things that episodic television, and especially sci-fi, likes to visit. And that's the Mind F episode, or as I'll call it, the Mind Frack episode. And I'll get into that a little bit more later. I found, obviously, the outside of Picard's mind stuff a little more interesting. But when I went and watched it again, there was stuff that I missed regarding inside Picard's mind. Mm-hmm. And I was starting to really kind of, you know, pay attention. It hurt my brain a little bit, to be honest with you. I wanted to kind of just, because, you know, when I saw the trailer for this series ahead of time, I was really excited. I was going to get some time travel, you know, some heisty type stuff going on. And we've been getting that, and that's great. But then it kind of turns and does this episode. And the analogy that you just used, where it doesn't go straight or go forward, it just kind of stalls a little bit, but then it gets really deep. I don't know if that quite worked for me. I'll talk us through that a little bit later, because I have some more thoughts about it. But I will say this, for me personally, my first impression is it's step back, and it's my least favorite episode thus far. Mm-hmm. Going you know, of what we've seen in this second one. And I know I'm not alone in that. Right. But I gotta say, though, one of the best lines in it, I love the fact that we got a call back to Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, when Dr. Teresa Ramirez says, "Are you from outer space?" And Rio says, "No, I'm from Chile. I just work in outer space."
Yes.
It's funny too, because it was kind of like how he kind of hesitated a little bit trying to think about what he was going to say. And I'm like, that's interesting.
I mean, now, it's still a good line, but that, you know, that it comes from Star Trek IV makes it even more funny. Yeah.
But I got to say, when it comes to the people that could say it or could have said it after Kirk, I got to say, Cristobal nailed it.
He did.
Yeah, it was great. So I like to visit, of course, our Den of Geek friends. They always do great reviews. And I was starting to see a similar theme with some feedback about this episode that was kind of mirroring what I was thinking. And there's some stuff I hadn't thought of. And Lacey Bauer did a great Den of Geek article on this episode. It says, "Picard takes a literal deep dive into Jean-Luc's subconsciousness and undoes much of the season's forward progress in the process." Kind of echoing what you just said, Amy. Mm-hmm. After two fairly exhilarating and propulsive episodes, Star Trek Picard pumps the brakes on almost all forward narrative momentum for an hour that unfortunately goes back to some of season two's weakest elements. Part of the problem of much of Monsters revolves around the trope that's kind of lame, even when it's executed well, which involves one character being forced to enter the mind of another in order to help them subconsciously fight the demons that plague them. And the thing is, it's not like I'm adverse to an episode that's essentially a deep dive into what makes Picard tick, subconsciously speaking. There's something painfully poetic about the idea that the reason child Jean-Luc went on to become an adult was willing to fight so hard to save others so that he couldn't save his mother from the darker parts of his own mind. Now, I want to just kind of reflect on that part of the article there, Amy, because they mentioned this kind of trope that I had talked about, the deep dive, the is it happening, is it isn't, someone else trying to really get in there, dealing with a little bit of mental issues as well, and what's happening with... it seems like they're really trying to dive deep, deep into some things that Picard has buried. And I do find that interesting, but I wanted to ask you regarding what this reviewer is saying about, is it working at this time right now? And do you think that it will pay off a little bit later when we find out what Q's up to?
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from. And yeah, I don't know if it works as well as they had hoped. Because sort of as you were talking, I was like, yeah, this is a trope. I didn't even think of it that way. And then the whole thing with Talon and the Romulan ear and Laris, like I didn't like that tie-in actually with it. And so for her to go in... And then plus I'm like, how is she doing that? Was she able to do that with Rene Picard, who she's supposed to be watching?
Right. Yeah.
And so has she done that before?
And we saw no Rene in this episode.
Yeah. And it's like, well, if she's able to do that, why haven't we seen that before? It was a bit of a jump. So I'm going to agree with you on that.
Yeah. She goes on to say, of course, he carries emotional scars from his experiences, like of the short, like of the sort where he's probably never really wanted to look closely at. Again, all of this is completely understandable and deeply human. Where the story loses me, this is what the reviewer is saying, is the bit where his grief over his mother's madness literally rewrites his entire understanding of his own father and his own role in his life. Well, that and the fact that Picard had a brother and none of these flashbacks were ever mentioned in any way. How does he and that relationship fit into all of this? This has been another thing that's come up before. Where is Robert? Yeah, and Renee's his son. Why isn't this coming up? Why isn't this really becoming a thing? Because when we were looking at, I think it was last week's episode of The Ready Room, they were talking about the history of Picard. And there was a lot of meat to chew on that. And even though they kind of, you know, came to an agreement at the end of that family episode and understood each other, there's still a lot of animosity they could have touched on with this. Why do you think we haven't seen that? Now we're going towards the parents instead.
Well, in my mind, it made sense. And so, yeah, let me just sort of explain, because I want to go back to Picard's viewing of his father. And I unfortunately have dealt with students who have lived with parents with mental illness, and how they view their parents so completely different. And this episode, I think we really get a good perspective of Yvette's, right? The mom and her fear and paranoia and what she's doing and taking Picard and taking him down to those tunnels and the dungeon, and she's afraid, and she's unfortunately not knowing, but that's Picard is picking up on those feelings. And so he's anxious and he just wants to be with mom, and she goes off running down the tunnels and he's stuck. And so here comes dad, thankfully saving him and getting him out. But I think Picard is seeing Maurice like, well, you are preventing me from going and chasing after my mother, so you're the bad guy. But then later, when Picard realizes that Gaius Baltar really is his dad, Maurice, and what that connection is, where he's like, oh, I probably misjudged you because I wasn't looking at it from your perspective. He couldn't. He's a child. Right. He's looking at it from what he feels. And I totally understand why Robert isn't in this story, because him and Robert were never close. And so for Picard, like when I think about my childhood and I have two evil, mean stepsisters, like part of my life, I don't really think about them because like they were mean to me at that
time. But where is Robert in this family situation, like a younger version of him? You know, why isn't he in that this thing, you know, that's
right. It's Picard's perspective.
Yeah.
That's sort of how I looked at it, that it's like, yeah, there's this older brother, but I don't even like him. And I want to be with my mom, and mom is the focus here.
I'm going to choke it up to what the next thing that the reviewer says is the connection to Q here. Cause maybe that's what's important. The relationship with his parents, not his brother, is what's most important here. And the reviewer goes on to say, but the episode's last 10 minutes is almost enough to paper over many of the other flaws as Picard returns to see Guinan in the hopes that she can help him figure out what Q's epic trial is really about. And in doing so, Picard answers another long-standing Star Trek The Next Generation mystery, namely, why Q seems afraid of the Elorian in that series. And it turns out that part of the reason is because of the truce struck between the races long ago. Guinan's people apparently have the ability to vaguely control them, or at least enough to summon him whenever he is willing to be called out or not. So that was kind of interesting to learn a little bit more about that. And then she calls out saying, but since we certainly aren't getting any answers to any of this until next week, let's take just a second to appreciate Ito Aguirre's performance. Her younger version of Guinan is so spot on, with her warm chemistry with Patrick Stewart and her effortless snark and the physical mannerism she clearly copied from watching Whoopi Goldberg's Next Generation work. At this point, if we don't get to see her face off with John DeLancey properly before Picard and friends go back to their own time, it'll be a real shame. She gave it a rating 3.5 out of 5. I just want to say, I think that Ito is doing a great job, and we'll talk more about her in the writer room. But I was really feeling the Guinan channeling there. And interesting to see this kind of genie bottle that comes out going, want to see a cue? Let's rub this.
Yeah. See, and that's why, again, this whole fantasy, like, yeah, genie in a bottle, here's Q. Let's, yeah, rub the lamp and make him come out and give me three wishes. Like, it was more fantastical than I've ever seen Star Trek.
But it was nice to see her explain, though, that Elorians love food and wine, and that is a way they like to celebrate, and so they decided to put it this power inside of a bottle and stuff like that. So,
well, and you know, one really cool thing that I liked about the whole bottle thing was that it captured the verbal agreement. I mean, and it was like, we're going to have a drink of sound, and it just sort of reminded me of Discovery. Remember the last two episodes that I absolutely loved, where they learned to communicate, but it's not using words. It was using emotion. Right. And so the writers, it seems, are just twisting and turning what we would think is a normal sensory, like, I'm going to talk to you. No, I'm capturing that in a bottle. Who drinks a sound? Like, it's so poetic and beautiful and different to look at it that way. I thought it was pretty nice.
I tell you, I would love that Elorian bottle sitting right over here on the counter right now. That'd be a really cool little keepsake to have. Yeah. Okay, so I saw some other reviews here that weren't as favorable to this episode, and they were kind of saying certain things. This one reviewer on IMDb says, the last few episodes have been poor at best and one of the worst for me. Pointless, uninteresting, and a jumbled mess. The last two episodes were best 20 minutes airtime stretched to 80. Elorian magic in a bottle. Another person says, if there has ever been a show that has made it clear that there wasn't a showrunner at the helm, it's definitely Star Trek Picard season 2. The season started well with two good episodes, and it went downhill from there. And I bring up this particular review here, Amy, because I've seen this pattern a lot with a lot of TV recently. A lot of fan type of TV. Whether it's Star Wars, Star Trek, stuff that kind of falls under that, Game of Thrones, what have you, is that the last line that this person says, the episode felt like it was written by an intern, because it was. And I was wondering, like, what exactly did he mean by that? Did you know that in the credits, there are 22 producers listed for Star Trek Picard, whether it's executive producer or producer? The writing credits, there's like 8 or 9 of them. I was looking, same thing for like Star Wars when it comes to certain episodes or the movies. There's like 15 producers and 15 writers. And it reminds me of like a lot of these pop songs that have like, you know, 14 writers and, you know, 7 producers to try to get that particular thing. And sometimes it works and a lot of times it doesn't. And that's actually been one of the biggest problems when it comes to the Star Wars side, when it comes to certain people's problems with the recent Star Wars movies, is there's too many cooks in the kitchen. And if you look back at like the older Star Trek episodes, whether it's TNG or DS9 or Voyager, you see that there's like a main showrunner with a couple of main writers, and they get together and do it all the time. And then they'll bring in like maybe one guest writer a week, and they'll kind of do that with them, and then those guest writers will leave and bring in something else, but they still have like 1 or 2 or 3 main people, not like all of these hundreds of extra people working on this thing. Have you noticed that that's kind of a thing nowadays? And if so, has it been an issue for you, or have you just, you know, not really mattered?
Well, I'm a little hesitant to go all the way on board with that, because I think nowadays getting credit for any amount of work has been so dissected and so planned out, like, you know, the SGAs or whatever their union is,
the Screen Actors Guild War.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. The SAG guys, yeah.
Yeah, that they have to have so many credits. If I, you know, give you X number of lines for a story, then I have to get credit. And so I'm almost feeling like there's that many producers because they may have put in a little bit, but I'm in my mind still envisioning the writer's room. When I hear and see them like on Twitter, like they love Trek. And especially when you go to these conventions and you hear the producers and the writers, and how much they love Trek, I'm okay with it. Okay. Because I feel no one here is wanting to give a bad episode.
Right.
No one. I can't think of any of those 22 producers. They're giving their best.
That's a good way to put it. And I remember when we were talking about a Discovery episode of one of the bridge crew that we're always hoping to hear more of was at a panel, and fan asked a question like, you know, when is it your character going to do this and that? And like one of the writers or producers was like taking notes, you know, and then they brought it into the story later. It's nice to hear that type of stuff. But when you start to see a pattern, and I'm not saying we're seeing that right now, you know, we're having one episode that maybe is not everyone's favorite, but when you start to see a pattern of, quote, too many cooks in the kitchen, yet you, it's a little red flag. And so when I was looking at like all the people, even when you look at the opening credits, it's like, there's a lot of executive producers here. So obviously there's a lot of people that are working on this together, but I was reminded of this, the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Leave Behind, where you brought back like the three or four main showrunner guys, and they were in that room writing what would happen in Deep Space Nine, season 8. And they were just running off ideas and doing it like that. That's a type of think tank I like to see, when you get people that really work together and they just do it. I love it. I like that type of thing. So, well, we got a little bit of trivia here. I think it was kind of cool. Patrick Stewart's wife, singer, and songwriter, Sunny Ozell, has a cameo in this episode as the singer in the nightclub when Allison Pill, Girardi, walks in. She sings a song from her latest album. I didn't know that. I was just like, man, that chick's got pipes. That's cool.
Yeah. And I saw her and I didn't quite recognize her, but I'm like, I should know her. And then, yeah, found this out, but I did not know that it was one of her songs from her album.
There's a famous picture online of both her and Patrick Stewart decked out, and she's looking like she's smoking, right? She's looking hot in her dress. And you see Patrick Stewart like checking her out, and there's like memes going, you know, do you look at your loved one like the way, you know, he looks at his wife and stuff like that. And I was remembering that picture. Of course, you mentioned that Rios is lying to Teresa, of course, is the famous Star Trek IV line. I'm from Iowa. I just work in outer space. The Starfleet therapist that Jean-Luc Picard imagines is wearing a never-before-seen uniform variant. It features the comm badge style introduced in 2371 Generations and the same colors introduced in 2373 First Contact. However, it lacks the quilting on the shoulder yoke, and it seems that the material is noticeably different. I was kind of noticing that, too. Is like, almost felt like later Deep Space Nine, First Contact, of course, but then this is kind of in his mind, so it's kind of an amalgamation of what was happening. But I did want to ask you, Amy, going back a little bit, of this therapist here, is James Callis, the psychiatrist, the Maurice Picard, a.k.a. Baltar from Battlestar Galactica. I had a little trouble remembering who he was at first until he started speaking more, but I was just like, oh, it's Baltar.
Yeah, that was such a fun treat. I did not even see that coming. So glad to welcome him into the Star Trek fandom and universe. So exciting. He was brilliant. Brilliant. Oh my gosh, yeah. I loved him. And he's evil.
Yeah, he was just like poking Picard, you know, and just not being, you know, being a little rude, just trying to, you know, that was kind of funny. What else do I have here? Oh, Jay Carnes, the actor who played the FBI agent, also appeared in the Voyager episode Relativity. He played Lieutenant Duquesne from the 1999 episode.
Okay, so I think that there's some theory that might be a Q transplant. I'm just throwing it out there.
Okay. I like that, actually. It makes sense.
There's something about that FBI we were talking before we started. Like, there's something odd with him, and he might have a Q connection as well.
I totally got a Fox Mulder X-Files vibe from him. Like, you know, he's like, you know, if there's something strange going on out there, I'm going to be the one that's going to understand it, not my partners, you know?
Yes.
And of course, this is the first episode of this series, of this season, where Q does not appear physically or real or in flashbacks. Just mentioned, of course. So, all right. Well, let's get into our away missions here. Now, Amy, you made the suggestion. I loved it. We have two away missions with a few topics in there where we're going to, away mission one, we're going to go inside Picard's mind. And then the next away mission, we're going to go outside of Picard's mind. But let's go into inside Picard's mind. So Picard's therapy sessions with the psychiatrist slash Maurice Picard, played by, of course, James Callis. We get discussions of, oh, the queen with red hair. Maurice Picard says, your mother suffered cycles of terrible darkness and irrational exhilaration. She needed help, but she wouldn't accept it. I want to kind of talk about that, Amy, because I tell you right now, knowing from personal experience, when someone needs help and doesn't want it or doesn't accept it is a tough thing to live with. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that, I'm not necessarily saying that Picard remembers his father is not trying to help. He is experiencing, even though they're both experiencing the same moment at the same time, they're reacting differently. And of course, kids will react differently to what than a parent would here. But that whole scene with his mom, is this, first of all, was this a adventure or something that his mom would do a holodeck thing of, or is this just something that played out in this fantasy monster type world in young Picard's mind because of how horrible things are going with his mom and how, what she was dealing with?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think when Yvette was doing the art thing on the glass and the painting, and like, I had a best friend whose mom was bipolar, and she would tell me these stories of, yeah, my mom would just, we would get and make a hot, you know, put blankets over the furniture, and we would just be in there, and it's just this wonderful play time. Right. And we would do coloring and stuff. And this is my friend telling me this. And then, but then it would switch. And she's like, you know, I would come home and I would never know which mom I would have. Mm. And so when I see Yvette and Picard, you know, living in these fantasy and play time and make believe, I truly believe that that's what his mother was doing. I mean, she was trying to escape, whether it be through storytelling, through art, you know, painting the gazebo or whatever, or, you know, or literally trying to escape by going in through the tunnels. But then add that to the fact that we have Maurice, who does not want to have anything to do with technology or anything science related, that maybe he could have helped her to understand that she needed help, but he wasn't willing to go there. I mean, we know that they were cooking by fire and everything was made by hand. So I think it was sort of the perfect storm of Maurice, right, and Yvette.
I forgot about his anti-technology part and how that, yeah, played a hand in it. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Regarding Picard's family flashback here. So Talon is exploring Picard's mind. Q wants Picard to relive these forgotten memories. It's urgent and personal to Q. Talon reveals that she's actually a Romulan, possibly Laris's ancestor afterwards. But back to this whole Q thing here. It seems that there's something specific that Q needs Picard to remember. And I think that this is going to tie to why he has been toying with Card for so long. And there's something in Q's past that ties them together, I think, is what they're getting at here. What is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and it's got to be related also to why Q's powers are diminished.
Not working. Yeah.
So I heard also out there on the Twitterverse, like, that maybe this is a father connection. Like, maybe Q needs to deal with issues with his father, or we know Q is a father, right? In Voyager, because he has his kid Q, and is maybe he feeling like he wasn't a good enough father to his son. So there might be that father connection there. And then it's also brought in with Rios when the doctor asks, how do you know this guy? Well, he's like my father.
Yeah, so there's a father theme here.
This episode.
No, yeah, that's true. And that was one of the smart things about this episode that I appreciated. So just a funny thing popped into my ear. So she's trying to summon Q, right? She was trying to summon that Q, but could she, you know, just for fun, let's rub this thing and see if the Corbin Burnson Q or the Amanda Q comes out, you know, because Corbin could just snap his fingers and give him his thing back, right?
See? So why can't the FBI agent be a Q?
I like that idea. I hadn't thought of that. That's cool. That would be awesome, by the way.
Right?
Okay. I want to get into the Mind Frack episodes.
Yes.
Okay? It's more of a TV trope. Yes, it's done in films. But I call it a TV trope because it's used a lot with TV. A lot of science fiction shows too always has that one episode. It kind of feels like a bottle episode. They don't go to a lot of places. Someone's dealing with something in their mind, or their mind's taken over. Something happens and it's all about finding out how to fix it. Someone going in there trying to fix it. Someone messing with someone, trying to torture them mentally, whatever it is a trope. And I decided to look online to figure out what about Star Trek? What about Star Trek Mind Frack episodes? And several of them were thrown out by fans I found on TrekBBS.com and also on Reddit.com. And a lot of the episodes that were thrown out when it comes to TNG episodes are such: Frame of Mind, the Riker episodes, Ship in a Bottle, Cause and Effect, Conundrum, Future Imperfect, Silicon Avatar, Clues, Parallels, A Matter of Perspective, Coming of Age, The Survivors were some that were thrown out. Amy.
And one more. That would be Eye of the Beholder.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. So some of these I say fall under the Mind Frack. And frack stands for that other F word, but can't say it here. Some of these fall under that category and some don't. Stuff like, I would say, Cause and Effect and maybe Clues or Parallel. They're kind of more of these like solving a puzzle type thing, you know, mm-hmm. little alternate universe-y things, which are fun in their own way. Frame of Mind is one that really comes across as a Mind Frack episode. That is that one where you really get, and I'm going to be perfectly honest, this is the Riker episode. Like, he figures out what's happening, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And he's imprisoned and da, da, da.
In the mental.
Yes. I can't stand that episode. I'm not a fan of that episode. However, I love Jonathan Frakes' performance in that one. He is so good. And that's what keeps me watching that episode. Because of how good he is and how much he nails it. Your thoughts on the Mind Frack trope, specifically when it applies to Star Trek here. Are you a fan of those? And do some of these work for you as Mind Frack episodes and some do not?
So we dance on the edge, because I love Troy so much. We dance on the edge of when does it become a violation?
Yes.
And yeah, so I'd like to add another one to that and see if you think it fits. Sarek. So when Picard and Sarek mind meld, that's to help support Sarek.
Yeah.
So it's still getting into his mind.
Yeah, but it's not a, you know where people are. You know where people are on the ship. You know where they, you know what room they're in. You know, mm-hmm. you know they're not taken away to another planet or, you know, messing with that thing. So I don't think that falls underneath that. It's a good suggestion though, because someone is getting into the mind, but I'm talking right. about the, is it really happening or not scenario. And that's what right. I mean by mind frack. I'm trying to, that's why I ruled out like Clues. Clues was cool because, you know, there's this alien race that was trying to erase their memory so they wouldn't, the xenophobic race, I'm forgetting what the name of it was. But that was cool because it was like we love mysteries. And then they explain that to them later. Parallels was like that weird kind of like different time thing, you know, and what was happening there. And trying to remember the Matter Perspective, maybe. I'm trying to remember that one.
That I don't think, because they didn't go in their minds. What about DS9's Hard Time?
Okay. So that's a good one.
That's this category, I think, because you don't know what's real, because that was all in his mind.
Hold on. You're talking about when O'Brien is basically
served a life sentence.
I think this falls a little bit in a different scenario, because that was a punishment. And you knew that, you didn't know if you as a viewer didn't know, knew what was happening, but he didn't to a certain degree. Because I'm thinking like that was just a form of punishment. That's horrible. You implant this prison life in his brain and he felt like he had to actually live it. And you see on the outside of what's going on, and then also on the inside it's doing. But I don't know if you're really messing with his mind to where he doesn't know what's going on, or you don't know what's going on. You know what's going on with him, that he just basically had prison life put into his brain. And there isn't a big mystery there. You're watching him deal with it, though, is a different scenario.
Yeah.
Good suggestion, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anything else to these episodes that kind of fall into that mind frack thing for you? And what do you think about that trope?
I never had really thought of it. So, but now I am. And yeah, I think Mind's Eye, the one where, again, like Troy, the weird face in the, from Utopia, Planitia.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's
and
a good
that's
one.
That's the one where Troy's and they jump into the thing and she's about ready to jump and Worf pulls her and
yeah, that's a mind frack episode.
Yeah, yeah, that one for sure. So yeah, there are a lot in Star Trek. Yeah. And now we're gonna add this one to it, Monsters.
Definitely, definitely. All right, let's go into away mission number two here. Let's get outside of Picard's mind here. Let's talk about what's happening, boots on the ground in reality here. Let's talk about Rios in the dock. Rios shows them his ship, and this is the cool line where he says, "I'm from Chile. I just work in outer space." And I just want to say my prediction came true that he was going to open up to her. I had made the bold prediction of going even further about taking her away and her son, and maybe they live in the future. Who knows? But I love it when stuff like this happens, when current day people see the person from outer space or the future come and you get to see the reaction. And I loved her reaction of open mouth, dropping her drink, kid dropping his toys and going, "I'm going to touch everything."
What the perfect kid response.
I know, right? What was your thoughts on that scene?
I was like, what the heck is he doing? Why is he doing this? I'm not on board. And I'm like, you can't be messing with the timeline. But then props to him. He sees Teresa and is like, man, maybe this is going to happen.
And he gets her to first like help Picard in materializing a piece of medical equipment and stuff, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, you know, he's like, well, what kind of, you know, guy do you want? Well, I want an honest guy. I want, you know, and it's like, well, I can be that. Let's see where it goes. I don't know. And it was a couple episodes when they were in the ice, you know, gated prison thing or you know, holding cell or whatever. And I was like, so sad to see Teresa go. Cause I'm like, I want to see Rios and Teresa together. And yet here they are. So I'm very happy. I know a lot of people don't want to see it.
I haven't met those people and I'm not one of those people. I want to see them. I want to see them making out. I want to see her take off with him with their kid. And speaking of,
I love their chemistry. Yeah.
Love it too. Love it too. And I'm kind of crushing on her as well. Just saying, but I did want to mention that you had pointed out that this is a father themed episode and how awesome Rios was to her son.
Yes.
Thought that was great. So.
Yeah, because like he's now seen, well, here's Picard, a father. Can I translate and can I be a father figure?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's talk about Safi or Refn. Seven and Raffi together here.
I see what you did there. I like Safi.
Yeah. I'm digging these two girls doing their thing. I love it. I love when Raffi goes on and says, kissing Rios. Look what this whole thing starts up again. I quit the gang. No, seriously. I don't think I have it in me. I mean, what? Oh, you and me? Nah. See, we're totally different. No, our pain's beautiful and tragic. Everyone loves hearing about it. Plus, we're the main event. Now, Girardi and Rios, they're like the side story. And obviously, you know how the main story ends. I loved that little monologue between those two. I thought it was great.
I loved it too. But I took it a little different way. So I want to, can I reread that?
Mm-hmm.
Because when Raffi's saying, no, our pain's beautiful and tragic, and everyone loves hearing about it, I felt like that was a jab to Seven, because Seven, her response was like, oh, you notice that I'm not talking about it. Like, you know, when you're in a new relationship and you're like, yep. Did you tell anyone about us? No. Okay. That's a signal. Like, okay, that's where you are in the relationship. You're not wanting to talk about it. And then Raffi continues and says, we're the main event. And, you know, that they're the side story. And then it's Seven who says, and obviously you know how the main story ends. Again, sort of a jab is like, you've got this all worked out. I don't think I'm there yet. I don't know. I was reading hesitancy with Seven, and I give way props to Raffi for saying her feelings and saying, I want this to happen. I see a beautiful future between us. I'm just hoping that Seven will reciprocate, because I think they're beautiful together.
That's a great point. And I agree. That would be fun to see that happen. And yeah, I like that. That's good. That's good. Yeah.
I sort of may have read some things from personal experiences, but that's where it's coming from.
No, I like that. That's good. That's good. Well, when it comes to Raffi and Seven talking about this whole Borg Girardi thing, Raffi goes, do you understand what this could mean? A Borg queen loose in Los Angeles? Seven says, she's not the Borg queen. Don't say that. She's Girardi, or she's exactly... Is it Girardi with a side of Borg Queen or vice versa? There. I thought that was funny too, but apparently Borg Girardi needs endorphins to stay Borg here. I didn't say Girardi Borg, by the way. I said Borg Girardi because we're seeing more of Borg here. Seven says, we're witnessing the birth of a new queen. We're trying to save the world, but we might have just doomed it.
Yes.
I know. I'm curious to see where this goes.
I know. I mean, and I'm getting First Contact flashbacks all, you know, coming back, because when they go in and then the Enterprise scans Earth and it's like, you know, 5-3 billion all Borg. And I'm like, this cannot happen in 2022. Please, no. Or wherever we are, 2024.
So they're saying that the Borg Girardi needs endorphins to stay Borg and become more Borg. So... is she going to start doing extreme sports? I mean, what's going on?
That's what, yeah, she's going to break the window. She's going to go up and karaoke. She's going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. And the last part of this away mission for outside Picard's mind, we got to talk a little Picard and Guinan here. Picard wants Guinan to summon Q. And Guinan says, a long time ago, after a long cold war, Elorians in the Q continuum struck a truce. The truce was made over a bottle. We talked about that. But the summoning did not work, much to Guinan's surprise. The look on her face was priceless. And then, of course, at the end, Picard and Guinan get arrested by the FBI. And we get the cliffhanger there. So we learn a little bit about why the Q continuum doesn't really like the Elorians, because they have some type of control over them, apparently. But I have a feeling, though, when it comes to Guinan herself and Q, John Delancey Q, there's something a little more there.
I think so, too. Yeah. And it's like, we've got 35 years, you know, that we've been waiting to hear about this Q and Guinan ever since Q Who, and we're still waiting. We need to know.
Now, there really hasn't been a direct reference to that famous scene where Guinan is in 10-4 and she's holding up her hands in that way, like Ito did in this one. And you feel like it's specifically towards that Q, as in John Delancey Q. We don't get that mention yet, you know, but we do get that there is something weird there among Elorians and, of course, the Q Continuum. So at least we get that. Maybe we'll get more of that later on. But I wanted to throw the ball back in your court there, Amy, if there's anything else that you wanted to comment or any reactions to this week's episode before we close it out.
Man, we've just covered everything that I wanted to talk about. Yeah.
Where does this episode rank in the season thus far with you?
Yeah, it's not my favorite. And just sort of like I said at the top, and, you know, I have my brother and we watch Picard, but I know he doesn't like these introspective type of episodes. And I said, you know, you don't need to watch this one. What happened in the story? I could tell you in 5 seconds. They summoned Q. No one showed up. Girardi's loose in LA. That's for the story arc. That's where we are. Nothing happened with Adam and Corey. And I want to see that relationship too. And so it's, again, you have to just be okay with the pause, with going deep. And then we're going to get back to the main story. So that's where I'm at. I'm going to take it for what it is, appreciate what I learn about Picard and fears and our fears. What is my fears? Why are we stuck and how do we unstick ourselves?
Right. You know, this, one of the criticisms and one of the reviews that I read that was, this was felt like a bottle episode. And of course that's an episode that's usually filmed in its confined sets and you don't travel and do stuff outside or, you know, location shots because of budgetary reasons or what have you. And so you keep your story kind of closed inside your already built, paid for set, so to speak. And this kind of had that feel a little bit, you know, they had these sets already done and such. But it was definitely more, and bottle episodes can go bad. And then some are done really, really well. And I've seen both sides of the fence when it comes to that. And this one I might have swung and missed a few times and then hit a couple little base hits here and there, but definitely not a home run. It's, you know, this episode 7 of this series, and I think it's my least favorite. But it did have a couple of really good moments, which keeps me watching episodes of Star Trek, even though they're not my favorites, because I look forward to those particular moments. So there you go. All right, well, we're not done yet because we're going to take a little break here, but we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the Ready Room and the great episode we had there. And then we're going to speculate what we might see in the next episode of Star Trek Picard. But we're going to take a quick break first from the Union Federation discussion and let you know what other great shows are here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to these other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, discussing the latest in entertainment pop culture. Blood of Kings, Immortals Take Notice, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theaters, where we celebrate our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie and TV pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville show. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our show covering the time-traveling Doctor Who universe with host Dan Hadley. Lethal Mullet, an 80s and 90s action film podcast with host Adam P. O'Brien. Also check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast with hosts Scott, Derek, and Nathan. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. And check out our newest shows, The Fandom Show, our monthly Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube exclusive show about the month's hottest topics in fandom, and the FPN True Believers MCU podcast.
discussing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the related Marvel television and streaming MCU universe, including the connections to the original Marvel comics. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on several platforms. Please subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network YouTube channel to receive notifications of new podcast episodes and live events. You can enjoy all of the Fandom Podcast Network audio podcasts on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find the Fandom Podcast Network on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right. Welcome back to Union Federation Podcast 123. We are discussing Star Trek Picard Monsters, Season 2, Episode 7. And we would like to continue. We're going to be hitting on over to the Ready Room. Right. Will had a great guest on this week, Amy. Of course, we had Ito Ogwe here, who plays Guinan, showcased in this episode, talking about playing Guinan and, of course, Star Trek's beloved bartender. The pair delve into what was like stepping into Whoopi Goldberg's shoes as Ogwe here elaborates on why Season 2's 10 forward bar was so significant to her. Plus, Ogwe here shares just how meaningful joining the Star Trek family is to her. And I thought it was really, really cool, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this, when Will asked, what moment was it that really made you feel like you found that character and you knew what you're doing? Like when he would walk into engineering, you know, he felt like he was feeling Wesley. It was like she put on these shoes.
Yeah.
And she had in this like kind of like that striped kind of sweater jacket thing that was worn but loved. And I thought that was a really cool way to describe how you feel like, okay, I'm feeling this character now.
Yeah. What a surprising response. I did not expect. Oh yeah. I put on just shoes. And then I knew, I was like, okay, shoes, that's not even a thing for Guinan. Like, it just was a weird thing. And Will asked the same thing to the Borg Queen. What's her name?
Alice Krieg?
No, this
Borg Queen. Oh, geez, I'm forgetting.
Oh, my
name.
Gosh, I just, Michelle, no. Annie Wershing.
Annie Wershing.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. So yes. when Will asked the same thing with Annie Wershing, and you know, she was like, did all the acting, and it's like, when did you know you were in Star Trek? And she's like, it was in the editing room and the music came on, and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm in Star Trek. Like, it's just the coolest thing. And I'm so glad that he asked that, because I would have never in a million years, I thought, yeah, getting on the makeup or, you know, putting on the clothes. No, putting on a pair of boots. Yep. That's when I knew I was Guinan.
I was trying to figure out like what would hit me. Of course, being a big Trek nerd, I'm sure just like showing up on the set right away. But if I had to play a character, it's a different perspective, I guess, you know, because that's when you kind of really would feel it if you're really getting that thing. But I remember they showed the boots from a distance. I'm going, those don't look really special about the boots.
Exactly.
But I guess that's how it hit for her there. So I thought that was kind of cool. I love seeing her being interviewed in person. She seemed to really, and it was funny too, because she talked about how she watched. Okay. So when Annie Wershing was being interviewed, she talked about how she watched the Borg episodes, and then she ended up watching several seasons because she got stuck. Well, she did. Ito did the same thing. She was watching the Guinan episodes. She ended up watching through like season 4 or something like that.
I know. And I loved it. And it just, she at the end just, you know, got so emotional and was so grateful to be filling this role and being a part of this Star Trek community. And I think when the actors and these new ones come in, and again, I appreciate Will being the one to welcome them into the family, because he's done it at a young age. Yeah, I did. Did you feel like she got emotional and was just very honored to be here? I loved it.
Definitely. And when she was talking about seeing women of color and her being a Star Trek fan growing up, and I love the fact that she felt like that bar 10 forward was someone that a, as she said, a Black woman would own or, or would live in and or work in. And I love the fact that they, the attention to detail they did for her and that character in that way. And that I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I really picked up on that too. And they did a great job, that whole, set design and everything. And for her to for her to recognize that. And I mean, I didn't think it, but I'm not a Black woman. So when she said it, it was like, oh yeah, I can see that.
Definitely. We also in the radio room, they had a retrospective on Jean-Luc Picard's family history. And of course they showed flashbacks to the episode Family, you know, with Robert and Renee, and then the one episode where we see the elderly version of Picard's mom, you know, in that one, I forget what episode that was, I'm forgetting. But you got a little kind of rundown of what we have seen since then.
Yeah. I didn't like these little montages, and this is the first Ready Room where I'm like, I felt like they were talking in circles with both what they did with the Picard family history and the Guinan and Q thing.
Right.
It was like, here, we're going to talk to you about Picard's family. Here's a picture of Picard's family. Oh, here's, and it just kept going around and around. And I'm like, well, when are you going to tell me something new? And then I was like, oh, come on, Nelson. I've been around. I've been talking TNG. This is for those viewers who are new.
Exactly. It's for us that talk Trek all the time. It's not for us. It's to remind people that have just watched this episode.
That there's a history.
There's a history there. And it's funny you say that, because I was just reminded, like, well, where's Robert in this episode? You know, I was reminded of what wasn't in this episode and why, and it got me questioning. I see where you're going, but yeah, it's just a correct. Although I am digging the woman who does the narration on that. I like her voice.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Pretty cool though.
You know, one thing that I wanted to touch on, before we move on too far away from Ito, when she said she was describing the scream that she had to summon.
Yes.
I thought that was so great. She's like, I already in my mind had a couple of screams. So I went in and I was like, okay, I'm going to scream at you and you tell me which one you like best. Okay. Lovely. Loved it. Loved it.
That sounds like so much fun. I would love to see the audition or the behind the scenes tape on that. Like what screams was not used, you know?
I know. I want to. Yeah. Where was that scream? And how would she have done it? Would it been like a more guttural or like a breathy?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. So when I was talking about the FBI guy, I had just finished watching this episode of Ready Room. And so I was, the scene that we get is the interrogation scene. For the next week's episode. And so I was kind of running that together with what the feelings that I was getting from this guy, from what we saw in this particular episode before the Ready Room, and you get teased of what's happening next week. So I was getting the Fox Mulder vibe actually from watching this teaser for the next episode. And then I was going back to what he said in the bar before they arrest him. Like, he's kind of like into sci-fi and he's, you know, he kind of had this kind of nerdy thing about him. You didn't feel like he was like the mean FBI guy, you know, like good cop, bad cop. You kind of feel he's more the good cop type of thing, you know? So with that said, let's make a prediction for next week's episode. What do you think we'll get from nerdy FBI guy?
Yeah, I think
he's cute.
Yeah, I think there is some connection there. So I really want to see that. But even if there isn't, yeah, he's going to be the guy that's like, understands and will get the story if it really does come out. And then he's going to be the guy that's going to break with the FBI rules because he knows this temporal is more important than current FBI law.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, though, that he is arresting them on this footage of Picard materializing from the transporter.
See, it's already flimsy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, how do you arrest someone on that? You know, I mean, it's not like he was trespassing, right?
Right. Well, and the thing is, like Guinan was saying, like, you know, there's holograms all around. I mean, even right now in Las Vegas, I can go see a hologram of Michael Jackson, right?
Yeah.
So the technology exists. So it's not that crazy.
And this is in 2024, 2 years from now, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's hologram concerts you can go to, you know?
So. Exactly.
So, yeah. Do you have any predictions that you think you might see besides his help? Anything else from any of the cast? Borg Girardi or Rios and the hot smoking doctor.
Girardi, what are we going to do with Girardi? Is she going to be strong enough? Remember, we talked about it a couple episodes, you know, like she's still getting the upper hand with the queen.
Was. And
I know, but now she's got the nanoprobe. So can her body, is her mind strong enough to control her body? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Regarding,
and I definitely, we got to get back to Adam and Corey because Corey just found out that she's not human. What?
That's
mind
right.
Blow.
Yeah, yeah. And
so, what is she gonna do? Is she gonna go crazy or bad?
And Renee Picard, you know, isn't her launch happening soon? I mean, yeah, we got to see what's going on there. Yeah. I'm curious to see where Rios and the Doc's relationship is going to go. And if I'm sure they're going to be helpful too. Mm-hmm. Having a doctor around is a good thing, no matter what century they're in. So I learned that watching Outlander. So, okay, cool. I'm excited to see what's going to happen. However, I will not be here next week. Because I'm going to be a little busy planning for an upcoming wedding in Las Vegas, which, Amy, you are going to be attending my wedding to my lovely Erin Gill.
Yes.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing you there in person. It's going to be fun.
Yes, it will. Oh, I'm just so excited for you. Oh, long time coming.
Long time coming, yes. Well, let's get into some subspace signals and some contact information here. Well, first of all, hope you guys have enjoyed our episode here, Union Federation Podcast, discussing Star Trek Picard, Monsters, Season 2, Episode 7. First of all, subscribe to the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. We are dropping videos there and also our audio podcast, and you get a little beep on your device there letting you know when something new drops there, so make sure you check that out. Our master feed for all of our audio podcasts, and of course, including Union Federation Podcast, can be found at fenet.podbean.com. And please, if you enjoy talking Star Trek and the Orville, join us, please, on our Facebook group, the Union Federation Facebook group. So, and we're really excited about what is coming up as well. So, the Fandom Podcast Network can be found on all major podcast platforms, which of course include Apple Podcasts and iTunes. You can find Union Fed on Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to email us directly, you can email us at theunionfederation@gmail.com. My name is Kevin Reitzel. I am on Twitter and Instagram at @Spartan_Phoenix. Anywhere can we find you? What are you up to?
Well, I took a couple weeks off, so there hasn't been any new Galaxy class.
You were trekking. You were doing the Trekkie stuff.
I was trekking, yeah. Yep. But there will be, so you can find me there. That's all about Next Gen. All Good Things is going great. We're coming up with some really fun series to talk about. We've done a Metamorphosis series.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's been really fun. So please go check us out. In fact, our next episode we're going to be talking about is Clues, because we have a Possessed series.
Nice.
So yeah, we're going to go
That was a well-written episode. I love it.
It really was.
So good. Awesome.
But you can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. And then of course in our Facebook group page.
Awesome. All right, cool. Well, Kyle is on Twitter at AKyleW and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. And of course, you can find Haley on Twitter at Trekkie01D. You can support the Federation Union Federation podcast and, of course, the Fandom Podcast Network. Give us some reviews, Apple Podcast, iTunes, or your podcast platform. Just search Fandom Podcast Network and give us a review for Union Federation. We would appreciate it. And also head on over to TeePublic and search Fandom Podcast Network or Union Federation. You get a cool Union Federation t-shirt or anything else that the apparel provides. Get on there, and that helps us out. So next week, let's look into the Orb of Prophecy. We, of course, just kind of tease that a little bit. Star Trek Picard Season 2. Episode 7 will be coming out, and we'll see what happens outside of Picard's mind. Maybe another dip inside Picard's mind. We'll see what happens there. But we also are counting down to Strange New Worlds and the Orville. There must have been some excitement with Strange New Worlds there at Star Trek Mission Chicago.
Oh, yeah. And I'm telling you, the pieces that they had in the museum, those uniforms just are so beautiful. I cannot wait to see what I saw in the museum to see in the TV series.
Well, it's coming up soon, May 5th through July 7th. And of course, Orville Season 3 is coming in June. Prodigy is returning later, as well as Lower Decks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So excited.
Can I give you a little bit about the Prodigy?
Oh, you got a tease for us that you learned there? Please do.
Yes. So Kate Mulgrew was on stage, and we had just watched a little clip of the next episode, which we still don't know when is coming. I really had hoped that they would have given us a date, but they didn't. But they saw a very close encounter between Chakotay and Janeway.
Ooh.
And so then one of the questions was, hey, is that mean that there's something going on between them? Because, you know, we all love our JC shippers. And Kate was like, well, of course, that's exactly what it says. This is a cartoon. We can't show anymore, but you're smart enough to read between the lines. Everyone went crazy. It is now canon. Well, according to Kate Mulgrew.
Nice. I'll take Kate's word.
Yep.
That's great. I love Kate. That must have been such a thrill to see her live on stage again. That is so cool. Awesome.
So there's a little treat for those listeners who listen to the end. You're welcome.
Thank you for doing that, Amy. That was very cool. I'm looking forward to the return of that show. That show is brilliant, and it's just beautiful to watch as well. So, Amy, thank you so much for joining me for this week on Union Federation. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much. And again, please come back next week. Kyle will be back, of course, they'll be talking, of course, some more Union Federation. Goodbye, everyone. Hailing frequencies are now closed.